morning, everybody. And welcome to.
Good morning.
Hello, Cindy. Welcome to the Budget and Finance Committee for November the 25th. And would you call the roll, please?
On the roll for the Budget and Finance Committee meeting of November 25th, 2019, Director Abe Koga, Director Canepa,
here.
Director Chavez,
here.
Director Hudson, Director Ju, Director Mitchoff, Director Ross, Director Sinks,
here.
Director Wagenknecht,
here.
Committee Vice Chair Bowders,
here.
Committee Chair Groom.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. So would you all join us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please? Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We know Cindy knows.
That was, you were ahead of us there, Cindy.
Oh, sorry.
So we will now have public comment. Do we have any speaker cards? Is there anybody who would like to speak during public comment period? All right. We will now ask for approval of the minutes of April 22, 2019.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone abstaining or opposed? Very good. So now we will have the fourth quarter financial report. Mr. McKay?
Thank you, Chair Groom. Stephanie Osaz, our finance manager, will provide the fourth quarter financial report for the fiscal year ending 2019.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's good. So today I will present the fourth quarter preliminary financial results, which covers the period from July of 2018 to June 2019. The audited financial results will be presented by the auditors at the next budget and finance meeting. So in my presentation today, I will provide an overview of the revenues recognized, expenditures incurred, and the investment portfolio as of June, and provide an overview of our general fund balance and outstanding liabilities, and conclude with a review of our purchasing report for vendor payments exceeding $100,000 without board approval. So slide 3 provides an overview of the general fund major revenue categories and compares them to the 2019 adopted budget. As you can see, overall total revenues recognized during the fourth quarter represents 110% of the budget. I'll just go over a few of these categories. As you can see, our county receipts actuals are higher due to increased assessed valuations for several counties. Our actual permit fees, Title V and asbestos fees are higher than our budget, and this was due to a one-time adjustment to some of our fee payers' anniversary date to comply with Rule 1215. Interest revenue, as you can see, is higher, and that's due to a combination of just being a higher cash balance in our cash account with the county, as well as higher interest earned in the county's investment pool. I don't know why that keeps happening. Sorry about that. Slide 4 provides a prior year and current year revenue comparison. And when we look at the two fiscal year actuals and look at the significant differences, we see that the permit fee-related categories increased in 2019. And again, that's due to the Rule 1215 one-time adjustment and an increase in our fee schedule. The other category here that's somewhat significant is a reduction in penalties and settlements. And this is due to just larger fines collected in 2018. Okay, slide number 5. Summarizes our general fund expenditures incurred in the fiscal year and compares it to the 2019 adopted budget. Overall, our actual expenditures represent 101% of the adopted budget. In this slide, we've also included the recent office acquisition, which includes the purchase of the Richmond property known as Headquarters East, and our additional office space here on the 8th floor of this building. These purchases were approved by the board using the general fund reserves. Slide 6 also does an expenditure comparison comparing the prior year to the current fiscal year. And when we look at those differences, the main difference here is really for salaries in 2019. That's just due to increased staffing, and we had a 3.1% COLA. For benefits, we as staffing increased, so does benefit costs, and we also had an increase in our CalPERS required contribution. For services and supplies, increase in 2019 is mainly due to increased activities in various programs of the Air District. For capital expenditures, in 2018 was higher, and that's due to our JDE financial system upgrade and purchase of lab equipment. My apologies. Slide 7 provides a snapshot of the investments with the county as of June 2019, and the district's balance of $299 million represents 5.4% of the $5.5 billion in the investment pool. The interest earned for the fourth quarter was 2.4%. This slide shows the fund balance and outstanding liabilities, and it shows the 2018 and 2019 as well as our 2020 projected. And that our 2020 projected fund balance is estimated at $41 million. We've also included in this slide our CalPERS pension and our OPEB liabilities, totaling $105 million. Also, we've included here the projected principal and interest payment for a certificate of participation note for the purchase of this office space here in this building, which is estimated at $27 million. The next slide is a part of our quarterly reporting. We provide a listing of the vendor's payment that exceeds $100,000 without board approval. And the slide 10 and 11 shows the cumulative vendor payments that exceeds the $100,000. And this is mainly comprised of benefit payments, utilities and other routine services that require for us to conduct our day-to-day operations here at the district. And this concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Questions?
Sales are up.
Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Stephanie. I just have one question on slide 3. You stated that the permit fees and the Title V fees, the budget, the amount of revenue over the budgeted estimates was largely due to the one-time increase from timing on Rule 1215, right? So I'm just curious, what, in the absence of that additional sum, would we have been exceeding the budgeted revenues in those two categories or not?
We probably would have been just slightly over as we, you know, get additional or new permit that we would not have known or budgeted for. But in general, it's pretty close. In prior years, we've been pretty close to what we've budgeted.
Okay, so yeah. We didn't fall short in the absence of this one-time timing change, that this was just made up, and it's kind of a masking an issue or anything like that. That's what
right.
I'm looking
for. No, we wouldn't have. Okay. We would have been pretty close to our budget.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Now we will go to item number 5, the first quarter financial report for fiscal year ending 2020.
I will. Is the presentation? Oh, okay. Thank you.
Here
it comes. Thank you. Hi. So I will. This is our. This report will actually be brief since it's only our first quarter of the fiscal year, our current fiscal year. Again, the report is structured and similar as the prior report, so I'll go over these various categories again. Slide 3 presents the first quarter revenues, and we're about 20% of the budget for the first quarter. And of course, we'll expect to get our first large installment of county receipts in the second quarter. Our permit fees are normally billed in the first and second quarter, so this is consistent with what we expect for the first quarter. Our toxic inventory fees are slightly higher, but that will reduce once we remit the portion to the state. And our miscellaneous revenue is a little bit higher than was what was initially budgeted, and that's just due to the temporary lease back of the headquarters lease. I don't know why. So this slide 4 represents the looking at revenue comparison and comparing the prior year and current year first quarter. And so when we compare those two periods, permit fees decreased in 2020 for several reasons, one being that one-time adjustment for Rule 1215. The other is the we also had an increase in the fee schedule, and then we also have just timing of billing and revenues received. As I indicated before, most of our billing occurs in the first and second quarter. So there's just a timing difference there. Slide 5, overall, our actual expenditures represent 22% of the budget, and that's as expected. Salaries are at 20%, and that's just due to current vacancies. Our benefits are at 36%, and that's due to the payment to CalPERS for our unfunded liability. This next slide, slide 6, shows our expenditure comparison, comparing the same two periods. And again, we see that salaries increased in the current year, and that's just due to increased staffing and a 3.5% COLA. We see that benefits also increased, and that's due to the unfunded liability payment, as well as our health premium increases. This slide, again, represents our account balance with the county, and the district had $295 million, and that represents 6% of the $4.9 billion in the investment pool. And the interest earned for this period was 2.2%. This is the same slide that I had in the previous report, so it's exactly identical, so I won't go over that again. And again, to comply with our quarter reporting requirement, we are providing a listing of the vendor payments that exceed $100,000 without board approval. And this next slide provides the listing for the first quarter that exceeds $100,000. And this concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Questions?
Just one. The $295 million that we have, this is on the our treasurer. Is $295 million we have in that. In the fourth quarter, we had $299 million. Mm-hmm. What do we use that for? What comes out of that that makes it so that it would be $4 million less?
So any revenues we received, as well as any expenditures, for example, you know, you pay salaries, you're paying all your expenditures, vendor payments. So there's constantly an in and out of revenues. So each month it'll be a different cash balance left.
Okay, so that. Okay, I'll watch that in the future.
Okay.
Director Canova.
Thank you very much. Seems like we're doing rather well, just the economy. We live in extraordinary times. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, from a budgeting perspective, how do you, how do you budget when sort of the economy goes down and there's other different issues at play? I mean, how do you deal that relative to the reserve policy? Can you expand on that a little?
I'll defer that to Jeff.
Thank you, Director Canepa. That's certainly a very important topic. An important lesson we learned at the last downturn was that we want to be able to, so to speak, smooth out our necessity to adjust to the ups and downs of the economy. And an important, perhaps the most important point there for us has been that we build in payments beyond those that we are required to make to our unfunded liabilities. And certainly we have risks from the economy, but we also, as we all know, have somewhat, to some extent, known risks from CalPERS changing their discount rates. Mm-hmm. And so our building almost as a structural part of our budget, because it's gone on so long, building in extra payments there has been critical. I would say that in addition, we've frankly, we've just benefited from the fact that the economy has continued to exceed our expectations slightly. And so that's helped us always put a little bit into reserves.
Anyone else? Director Chavez, you any questions, comments? Okay.
No, but thank you for asking.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. Now we'll go to item six, which is California Employers Pension Refunding Trust participation and consideration to recommend and adoption.
Thank you, Chair Groom, members of the committee. Today, I'm going to talk about a recommendation for disposition of some funds that the board has previously approved to be set aside. And that's going to be not for medical, also known as other post-employment benefits, or OPEB, but today I'm focusing only on the pension side. Now, on OPEB, as the committee probably remembers, we're not actually required to set anything aside, and yet some time ago we started to do that, and so we're in a pretty comfortable space and approaching our 90% guidance from the board. Pension, of course, is different. The obligation, total obligation, is larger. And in addition, we are required to pre-fund pension. But as is commonly experienced, the discount rates from CalPERS have been problematic, and therefore we've seen some ups and downs in how much they've required us to fund, including a period when they thought we were super funded and didn't need to contribute. So the Air District, like I think a lot of other entities, has decided to try to put away a little more than is required every year. Not a lot, but a little bit, with a goal of at least hitting 90% in about 20 years within our ability to, you know, appropriately use our own opinions about discount rates. So I'm going to talk about that. We've just been putting the money into our basically into the counties, into the bank, with the rest of the $295 million, because we've been waiting for some new vehicles to come along, because we knew they were coming, and they have. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to actually reverse these two slides. We've got a $326 million obligation for pension. Again, I'm not talking about medical here. And according to CalPERS numbers, 74% of that funded. Because we've got $239 million in the bank, which leaves us an obligation of $86 million unfunded, which is 26% of the obligation. About 3 years ago, we brought forward to the board the idea that we might want to start setting aside an extra $1 million every year. At that time, we proposed that we would not yet decide what was the best place to put that money. It's been 3 years, it's only $3 million right now, so you know we're not talking about a huge impact by changing our investment return by a few percent, but we want to get every bit we can. So we have now this pension policy in place, a target of 20 years to reach a funding level of 90%. We've been setting aside $1 million every year. And so that means we have $3 million in the bank now, and the conversation today is about a recommendation we have for an investment option for that. So before I jump into the different options, I'm just going to, I think for completeness, I need to point out that since we created this policy to set aside a little more than we're required to, CalPERS has given us a new option. It's called the Fresh Start option. And frankly, it's really just very analogous to what one would do with a mortgage on a house. If you want to pay your house off faster, you could refinance for a 15-year mortgage. You pay it off faster, you save some money that way, but you have to pay more every month. And you have to pay that every month. It's not discretionary. So CalPERS has given us this fresh start option, which I think just for completeness we should discuss. We could, if we wish to, change the policy, no longer put aside $1 million every year, and instead effectively refinance our obligation at a 15-year rate. And I'll talk about the problems with that. You can imagine what they might be. You're putting yourself in CalPERS' hands. So I didn't, that sounded a little more sharp than I intended it to. So we could stop prefunding, we could continue prefunding, or we could move the CalPERS Fresh Start. And I'll talk a little bit about why really what we want to do is continue with the prefund and not use Fresh Start. So given that decision, if that's agreed upon, the next decision is, should we continue to use the very conservative, safe, but low-yielding option of the county investment pool, or should we use one of the new Section 115 trusts, of which there are now three? This is a pretty new kind of vehicle. Or should we just send the money directly to CalPERS, the extra $1 million? And as I've illustrated here, I'm giving away the entire presentation in this one slide, but then I'll go back and explicate. So we're going to recommend the use of a Section 115 trust. And then, of course, the next question is which 115 trust, because now there are three. And we're going to recommend the California Employers Pension Prefunding Trust. So now I will take us through these three decision steps. And I want to point out, we didn't just do this on our own. We hired NHA advisors to help us think through this. They were great, but a lot of this is pretty intuitive, so I don't think our opinions changed a whole lot. Let's start with Fresh Start. Again, we could just stop prefunding completely. We could continue with this current policy to prefund at about $1 million a year. Depending on your earnings assumptions, we end up saving $20 million to $35 million. Again, the analogy is to refinancing your mortgage. You got to pay more. But you end up saving some money. That's the Fresh Start, option number three. Option number two is to continue with what we're doing. Depending on our amortization assumptions, the savings is pretty similar with these two. And option two there, just continuing prefunding, gives us flexibility. If we go over to CalPERS Fresh Start, they tell us how much we have to pay. They have their own rather unique way of deciding how much we're earning on what we're paying, and I think we're going to recommend here a little freedom of action. So the language that they use is this. Fresh Start is when multiple amortization bases are collapsed to one base and amortized over a new, shorter funding period. So that's great. You're applying payments to an unfunded liability, but the bottom bullet is perhaps the most important. We're locked in with that. We can't go back. And that first con there basically just says you're not diversifying. We're putting that money the same place we're putting everything else. So we think we should continue with the current policy. Well, that then brings us to the next step, which is if we're going to set aside $1 million every year, do we want to continue putting it in the investment pool? That's option one. It's safe, but the investment returns are low. And right now, again, this is $3 million we're talking about that we've got. Or option number two, we could send the additional discretionary contributions directly to CalPERS to pay down the unfunded liability. There are problems there because there's an odd lack of visibility into how CalPERS is treating that prepayment. And frankly, a lack of visibility into how much you're earning with prepayments. So option three, send the contributions to the 115 trust. And I hope I was consistent with what is two and three here. Let's see. Two, straight to CalPERS, that's right. So pro, you're sending payments directly against your unfunded liability, but as I mentioned, it's a little difficult to understand how CalPERS is treating those funds, and it appears to most people that they're not really giving us the immediate interest earned that we should see. The payments don't reflect immediately, and again, we're not diversified. So we prefer this option, a Section 115 pension rate stabilization program. It gives us a pretty conservative but somewhat diversified list of options, and then we use those funds in the future to make our required payments when we wish to CalPERS. These are relatively new. So 3 years ago, when we first started setting $1 million a year aside, I think there was one option for 115 trust, but we knew there were more coming, and we didn't feel it was really time to jump in yet based on the difference in earnings we would see between, you know, leaving $1 million in the one place versus moving it. So we've got three options. We've got the Public Agency Retirement Services, PARS, PFM Asset Management, and this newer option, which I will admit is from CalPERS, but it's, you know, it's separate from CalPERS. Our OPEB we've been putting with a 115 with CalPERS, and that's worked out very well. So the pros, it's irrevocable. It can't be rated. Frankly, if we leave it with San Mateo, those funds could be used for other things other than pensions. So we very much like the idea that we're setting this money aside in an irrevocable way for the pension. So although we control the assets, we still have limited control. Higher investment yield than the county pool. The next last bullet, frankly, is just true in general about the idea of setting some money aside. It's not really specific to the 115. And the CalPERS, in its need to have very high earnings, is being a little speculative and has pretty broad set of investments, including forests, land, all kinds of stuff. So they've got volatility with the hope that that volatility also corresponds to higher earnings, but this would be somewhat less volatile. Those are the pros. Cons, the actual investment returns may deviate from initial projections. Another way of saying, a little more risky than just putting it in the bank with San Mateo. And it is true that those assets we're setting aside are not immediately reducing the pension UAL, but the pension UAL, frankly, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I ever defined that acronym, unfunded actuarial liability. The pension UAL is just something that CalPERS calculates based on their assumptions, and it's perfectly fine, it seems to us, to put the money aside elsewhere and use it to pay down the UAL when it seems best appropriate to us. So we're going to recommend a 115 trust. Well, then the last question is, which 115 trust? We've looked at these three. They're really very similar approaches, very similar historical returns. But the lowest fees are the CEPPT. And frankly, we've been very happy using CalPERS 115, and we know CalPERS isn't going away. So we're quite comfortable recommending the CEPPT trust for this. Just as an illustration, if we were to continue with this policy until we stop pre-funding OPEB, which is $3 million a year, and start using that $3 million a year for pension, this is what it would look like. And we would get to our 90% funding target for pension even quicker, around 2026 perhaps. And you can see there the difference between the blue line and the red line is the difference between going with the conservative investment, just leaving it in the bank, so to speak, versus going with a 115 trust. So I've taken you through our thought process there, and this is our recommendation. It's not a recommendation right now for a very large sum of money. It's just $3 million, but we're saying we'll recommend today that we put that $3 million with this 115 trust, and that's what we've brought to the committee today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Hi. So I think you mentioned earlier, so I wanted to confirm the thank you, Chair. The rate of return for our county investment pool is what?
It's been very low at times. I think right now it's hovering around 2%.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Less than that.
And is the 4 to 5% net investment returns that includes the 25 basis points for the investment?
That's correct. Fee costs? Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Director Sinks.
Thank you much. I think it does make sense to take some modest risk, but not a lot of risk. And but do wonder and wonder if you can peel the onion one layer on PARS versus PVM versus CEPPT. I know many of our public agencies have been using PARS and. Mm-hmm. We feel good about the service we've received there. What is the basis point difference, and what other differentiators would point us to CEPPT?
When we look at the historical rate of return, which you know by definition is backwards looking and doesn't necessarily predict the future, we cannot and our advisors cannot come up with any basis to come before the committee and say we really think this group is going to earn more quickly than this other group. Now, PARS, we've heard nothing bad about PARS. They were available earlier, and so people are already with PARS, and people are just now starting to get into the CalPERS option here. So really, it just comes down to the two items of 0.25% less that they're skimming off, and the fact that we know CalPERS is
50 basis points versus 25.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And how about the how about PFM? I'm not familiar with them, but
similar there.
Also 50.
Yeah, the only significant option there is they would actually let us do something more or less self-directed. In other words, if you wanted to let me make our decide what stocks we should buy, I'd be happy to do that, but I'm not sure I want that to be the policy for districts.
Yeah, no.
It wouldn't be the same stocks I'm buying. It would be different.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Jeff, for pulling this together into the committee for agreeing earlier this year to take a look at this. I think the presentation and the context was very comprehensive. This is my third time doing a evaluation of a 115 trust, the third agency I've served on doing this. And so I have agree with everything you've done up to one last point, and I have a set of questions about that last point, which is the CalPERS, the CEPPT recommendation. I agree with the PARS analysis, putting PARS to the side for a second. That was more of a staple thing that in the last 2 years, this is the third straight year I've done an evaluation of one of these. And so the thing I'm curious about, though, is that with the PFM, just from prior experience, what we did, and I'm wondering if you did any analysis with the independent consultant on this, we basically looked at what the fee structure was, what amount of contribution would be necessary to make the fee rate not, I wouldn't say a wash, but negligible. And then we actually had a series of private investment firms that manage these trusts come in and actually present to us what the options were. We contracted with one in the case of the city of Emeryville, and we went through as a budget committee what investment strategy we wanted. And there were ranges of conservative investment through, very high risk or high gain, if you want to put it that way. And it gave us a lot more flexibility over that. And so without asking you to maybe, pick stocks and bonds, so to speak, it gave the agency the opportunity to kind of look at a level of risk that we were willing to take. And in our case, we yielded 12% this year. And so I would just say the 4 to 5% was the only thing I didn't really agree with. And I didn't see any analysis that kind of suggested what would the range of options be. And I'm just wondering whether anyone else on the committee is interested in having someone come and present separately from pursuing a 115 trust, present on whether or not it's worth our time to do a discussion about what those investment valuations could be. We made a $11 million upfront contribution and into that fund, and we have similar policies that put additional money in annually into that. And there were kind of thresholds where the fees go down when you have invested a certain amount of money. So I think there are ways to actually talk about whether we borrow the $1 to $3 million up to a certain amount. We borrow from a reserve fund, and we take that annual budget contribution and backfill those reserve funds, right? So we have the money up front to keep fees lower. I'm just wondering whether there are, was there any evaluation of those things through the, I didn't see any of it in the presentation, so I'm wondering if the contractor provided you any of that guidance.
Thank you, Director Bowders. Yes, you're exactly right. We, in making this presentation, we made a certain decision about at what point to stop with the detail, and we absolutely can go into more detail, and it would be entirely appropriate. For each of these three 115 trusts, we actually had the trust come in and talk to us. So we did spend time personally with the folks to talk about their investments and the different options. And you're correct that although the differences between what generally would be three or four different options with each of these are not great, there are, if you go down just a little bit, there are different decisions to make about exactly what vehicle to use within the trust. So if the committee wishes to, we can absolutely, you know, we're not in a situation where it's urgent that we move it right away into the trust. We absolutely can go a level deeper on all of that, absolutely. I mean, in other words, if the committee is saying, yes, we do do want the 115, but which 115, let's go into the details and the numbers, that's easy to do. Yeah.
Director Ju?
Oh, through the chair, I really appreciated Director Bowder's recommendation and would second that.
Yeah. I see head nods.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chair Graham, may I ask a thank you.
Oh, yeah.
up here. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how long you're able to lock in a particular basis point rate for cost to us.
So I believe that those are set when we, I would double check this, of course, but I don't believe they can change, except in the sense that, as Director Bowders referenced, if our total investment crosses a certain threshold, then the what the firm takes is reduced, the percentage is reduced.
Thank you. And then on slide three, or I'm sorry, slide 13, if you could pull that up for a moment. There was a, as part of this slide, you referenced a, you were saying that there's a, that you can determine payment. And I didn't understand exactly what you meant. And I didn't understand how do you determine payment.
So we're putting these funds aside in a manner such that they can only be withdrawn in order to fund our pension obligation. And by having these funds set aside, we then have the choice in the future of making payments to the pension obligation out of cash flow or out of funds that have been previously set aside or any combination of the two. And that's...
What's that? Yeah. How do you determine, what would be your guidance to us about how you determine which is the source you use?
So, for instance, we were talking earlier about smoothing, so to speak. If times are difficult and yet there are obligations that must be met, pension in particular, then we are not obligated, in other words, continue using cash flow until there's a downturn. And as we've done in the past, in a sense, in the same way that sometimes we draw down reserves, when we had the downturn in 08, we came to the board and we said, we're going to ask to draw down reserves, and we think it's going to be this number of years, and we think we're going to draw reserves down this far. And the board tracked that year by year, and it tracked with what we had suggested it would be. So in a similar manner, if there were a downturn and we didn't feel we could use cash flow, or we would love to have some other option to help us meet our required expenditures, we could tap into this.
Thank you.
Yep. So is it your pleasure to have presentations to gain more information?
Yeah. And I just add, I think there may be $3 million is a small initial investment. It would be interesting to see the fee structure for these players as our funds grow. And also, if the CalPERS offering is new, maybe these other firms will recognize that and choose to compete.
Okay. So,
Chair, may I ask for a point of clarification,
sure,
please? Is the committee asking that it be the trusts themselves that come in, or that staff put together a presentation comparing the trusts?
Sure. Vice Chair?
I would recommend that we ask the staff to meet with the options that we would have, as previously discussed, and provide a presentation as opposed to have them present. That tends to be more of a marketing presentation in my experience. Yeah. So if the committee supports, I would recommend that staff meet with several options just to provide a flavor of what that could be, and perhaps Director Sinks's comment, provide striation as to what varying levels of initial investment would do to the fee structure, because mm-hmm. I really do believe that making a threshold of an initial investment is what makes this kind of kicks it off. And that's something that I think would take some more discussion, but is feasible to do with the various assets and other opportunities we have right now in the district. And to Director Chavez's earlier question, that kind of provides that smoothing you've spoken about. In our case, we make our annual payments, we've budgeted that, we just keep through different policies rolling money over into this trust now, so that when we do have that economic recession, we don't have to worry about falling behind on a payment to the pension obligations. So that would be my recommendation.
Okay. Is everyone in agreement with that? Mr. McKay, you'll come back to us at our next meeting, or the meeting after our next meeting, whatever?
Yes. Thank
okay.
you. With dogs and ponies.
Director Chavez, you cool with this?
That's great. Yeah, okay. I love it. Thank you.
Excellent. All right. So our last item is a public comment on non-agenda items. No, anyone in the audience like to speak? Okay. So with that, committee member comments or other business? Time and place of the next meeting will be Wednesday, February 26th. If that's not enough time to compile all this information, we can certainly delay that. With that, we're adjourned. Thank
Happy
you very
Thanksgiving.
Much. Thanks, Cindy. And thank you, Mr. McKay. This is a good meeting.
Good discussion.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
Of course, no problem.